Thank you for the introduction. It's a pleasure being here today. A great deal of my research over the last 10 years or so has been on methods for mediation on the one hand and interaction on the other. And today I'm going to be giving a result that sort of unifies these two types of questions. And the basic result can be understood pretty intuitively. It's essentially that if we take the overall effect of an exposure on some outcome, we can always decompose it into four parts. One part due to just mediation, not interaction. One part due to interaction, not mediation. One part due to neither mediation nor interaction. And a fourth part due to both mediation and interaction. So I'll provide some motivation for this. I'll give the formal result, talk about how we can do this statistically, and go through an example. So in some research contexts, we're interested essentially in the extent to which the effect of an exposure on an outcome is mediated by an intermediate we think might be on the pathway, and to what extent the effect is direct or through other pathways. But in other contexts, we might be interested in a slightly different question. We might be interested in the question whether A and our exposure and our mediator interact in their effects on an outcome. Does the presence of one somehow modify the other? And in some cases, both of these questions might be of interest. So as an example, which we'll return to a little later, in 2008, there were three genome-wide association studies that had found variants on chromosome 15 that were associated with lung cancer. And it was already known from prior studies that these same variants were also associated with smoking behavior, average number of cigarettes per day, say. And so the question came up, do these variants affect lung cancer simply because they affect smoking, and we know that smoking causes lung cancer, or is there a direct effect of the variants on lung cancer independent of, say, average number of cigarettes per day, say? Complicating matters further is that there was evidence of some form of gene-environment interaction. It looked like carriers of the variant allele would extract more nicotine and toxins per cigarette smoked than non-carriers. So the causal inference literature has developed a set of methods building on prior work in the social sciences to assess these this phenomena of mediation. And in prior work, we applied some of these techniques. We'll come to these analyses a little bit later, which suggested most of the effect of the variants on lung cancer seemed to be direct, at least with respect to average number of cigarettes smoked per day. That might have only explained 5 or 10% of the effect. We saw that there was evidence for sort of interaction, but there was no really way to quantify the importance of that interaction and how that related to mediation. And that's what we're going to try to do here. So Y will be our outcome, A will be our exposure of interest, M will be our potential mediator, which you think might be on the pathway, C, set of baseline covariates for each individual. For the sort of basic result, I'll be using counterfactual notation, but these do have empirical analogs as well, which I'll be going over also. But we'll begin with sort of the counterfactual notation for this effect decomposition. We're going to let Y subscript A be the counterfactual outcome or potential outcome for Y for each individual if we had set A to little a. So if we think we simplify the example a little bit initially and think about the genetic variant as being present or absent for each individual, we might think at least hypothetically about two potential outcomes, Y1, Y0. Would the person have had lung cancer with the variant? Would the person have had lung cancer without the variant? We only get to observe one, but at least conceptually we could imagine both of these. Secondly, similarly, we'll define M subscript A to be the counterfactual value for M if A had been little a. So we might think, how many cigarettes per day on average would this person have smoked? With the variant, how many average cigarettes per day would they have smoked if they hadn't had the variant? Again, we'll only get to observe one of those two. And finally, we'll let Y subscript AM be the counterfactual value for the outcome if A had been little a and M had been little m. So now we're thinking about queries along the lines of, would the person have had lung cancer had they had the variant and smoked 10 cigarettes per day? That would be our Y110. Or we might ask, would the person have had lung cancer had they not had the variant and had they smoked 20 cigarettes on average per day? That would be Y020. So now we have lots of these potential counterfactual outcomes. I'll begin with the result for just binary exposure, binary mediator, but all this does generalize to other contexts as well. So the basic result, and this is sort of without any further assumptions, and we'll get an empirical analog to this also, which just holds analytically, is that if we take the total effect, the contrast, and we'll come a bit later to what we can actually do with data. Right now we're just still thinking at a very high conceptual level, but if we take that contrast between what would have happened with the variant versus without, with exposure versus without, that total effect of the exposure on the outcome, one can show that this decomposes into four pieces, and we'll walk through each of these. The first piece is the effect of the exposure on the outcome if the mediator were fixed to zero, if average number of cigarettes per day were fixed to zero. And this is, in some sense, an effect due to neither mediation nor interaction. The mediator is absent, so there's no mediation, there's no interaction, but we still, for this to be non-zero, this contrast here, we need to have an effect of the exposure on the outcome completely independent of the mediator. That's our first component. We'll refer to this as a controlled direct effect, essentially a component due to neither mediation nor interaction. Second component here is the product of two terms. The first is what's essentially an additive interaction contrast counterfactual level, y11 minus y10 minus y01 plus y00. This is essentially capturing, this would be non-zero if the effect of both the exposure and the mediator combined were different than the sum of the effects of just the exposure and just the mediator alone. So we've got this contrast here is essentially just an additive interaction, and we multiply that by M0, the value of the mediator that would have occurred in the absence of the exposure. So for this term to be non-zero, we need to have an additive interaction. Interaction would need to be present, and the mediator would need to be present in the absence of the exposure. M0 would need to be 1. So this component, in some sense, is due to interaction. If this is non-zero, we must have interaction, but it's not mediation. For this to be non-zero, the mediator would have to be present even in the absence of the exposure. And we'll refer to that second term as a reference interaction. Our third component is that same additive interaction contrast, but now multiplied by the effect of the exposure on the mediator. So this component, in some sense, is due to both mediation and interaction. For this to be non-zero, we would need to have an interaction, non-zero interaction, but we'd also need the exposure to affect the mediator itself, so we'd need to have mediation as well. And our final components, the effect of the mediator in the absence of the exposure times the effect of the exposure on the mediator. So for this to be non-zero, we'd need to have the exposure change the mediator, there'd need to be effect of the exposure on the mediator, and the mediator would need to be able to cause the outcome even in the absence of the exposure. So this component is in some sense due to mediation, but not interaction. We wouldn't need interaction for this to be non-zero. So we'll refer to the third component as our mediated interaction, our fourth component as a pure indirect effect. So we've got our four components here in counterfactual notation. First, due to neither mediation nor interaction. The second, due to interaction but not mediation. The third, due to both mediation and interaction. And the fourth, due to mediation but not interaction. If you don't like counterfactuals, that's fine. All of these do have empirical analogs as well. So under some confounding assumptions, which we'll describe on next slides, the average value of each of those four components within a population are just given by these expressions here, where PAM is simply the observed probability of the outcome within strata of the exposure and the mediator. So these empirical expressions here are basically just taking the counterfactual y's and replacing them by the observed probabilities. So we get, for example, for the expected value of the control direct effect, this is just the average probability of the outcome amongst those with the exposure without the mediator minus the average probability of the outcome in the absence of both the exposure and the mediator. And if you sum up these four components, they will analytically always sum to the difference in the probability of the outcome comparing the exposed and the unexposed. Again, there's at this point, there are no assumptions here. This is just an analytic decomposition. This is just mathematics. To get to the causal interpretation, we're going to need some assumptions, but the decomposition itself is just mathematics. We could then also calculate the proportion of the total effect due to each of the four components, due to neither mediation nor interaction, interaction but not mediation, mediation and interaction, and just mediation, not interaction. We could likewise sum the second and third component, that due to just interaction, not mediation, that to interaction and mediation, to get an overall proportion due to interaction. And we could similarly sum the third and the fourth components, the component due to mediation and interaction, the component just due to mediation, to get an overall proportion due to mediation. Okay, so we've got a counterfactual contrast, we've got a similar contrast with empirical data. How do we relate the two? To do so, we need some pretty strong assumptions about confounding. And these are the same assumptions that are used in the mediation analysis literature. If we want to ask questions about pathways and mechanisms, these are the assumptions we need. They are strong, and we'll come back to that point a little bit later. We essentially have four different confounding assumptions we have to think about. But these are no stronger than the assumptions required to do mediation analyses to begin with. They're explicit in the counterfactual framework, but if you look at the techniques in the social sciences as well, they're making the same assumptions. They often don't acknowledge that fact, but for a causal interpretation, it's these same assumptions. So what are they? Intuitively, and we can express these in terms of counterfactual independence as well, but intuitively, they can be understood as follows. The first is that there's conditional on the measured covariate C, there's no unmeasured exposure outcome confounding, that we've essentially got all the common causes of the exposure and the outcome. And this would be sort of our ordinary assumption in observational epidemiology. So nothing really new here yet. Second, we need to control for mediator outcome confounders, common causes of the mediator in the outcome, to give our estimates a causal interpretation. Third, we need to control for common causes of the exposure and the mediator, variable C3 in this diagram. Here, if we're talking about mediation, we're talking about the exposure changing the mediator, that going on to change the outcome, so we're talking about the effect of the exposure on the mediator as well. We need to control for confounding of that relationship as well. And then lastly, we need that none of the mediator outcome confounders, variable C2 in this diagram, are themselves affected by the exposure. No arrow from A to C2 here. If that were the case, C2 would essentially be another mediator and one that was also serving as a confounder. One can make progress in that setting, but it complicates things. So for the basic analyses to work, we need this fourth assumption as well, that none of the mediator outcome confounders are themselves affected by the exposure. If we were to randomize the exposure, that would take care of the first and the third of our assumptions, exposure outcome confounding and exposure mediator confounding, but we'd still need to think carefully about mediator outcome confounders. In a randomized trial, if we're interested in questions of mediation, we still need to control for and think about mediator outcome confounders. We don't need to do that for the overall effect, but for the direct and indirect effects, we do. So how can this be employed in practice? It's pretty straightforward to do this. Sort of four-way decomposition in a regression framework. I'll give a simple example here with two linear regressions, but you can change these models to be whatever you want, sort of go through the analytic calculations and get out expressions for each of the four components. In the paper that accompanies this talk, we've done this for a number of standard cases, including binary and continuous exposures, mediators, and outcomes. But if we take, as a simple case, continuous outcome, continuous mediator, if we fit a linear regression for the outcome, including, say, an exposure mediator interaction term, fit a linear regression for the mediator, if we were to decompose the effect of changing the exposure from some reference level A star to some other level A, exposure were binary, we might just think of these as 0 and 1, our four components, control direct effect, reference interaction, mediated interaction, and pure indirect effect, that due to neither mediation nor interaction, just interaction, both interaction and mediation, and just mediation, are just given by simple combinations of the regression coefficients from the two models. And in some sense, these have pretty intuitive interpretations. Beta 1's the coefficient for the exposure and the outcome model that includes the mediator, so essentially not writing through the mediator, the reference interaction, if we're looking at a binary exposure and A0 is just 0, And this really just becomes the interaction term in the regression multiplied by the average value of the mediator in the absence of the exposure. The mediated interaction is the effect of the exposure on the mediator times the interaction effect on the outcome. And our pure and direct effect essentially just boils down to the effect of the exposure on the mediator times the effect, the main effect of the mediator on the outcome. So it has this pretty intuitive form, but one can, again, change these models. You can add additional interaction terms or nonlinearities and still carry out this sort of decomposition. In epidemiology, we're often working with binary data and sometimes case control studies, sometimes working on ratio scales, and this decomposition has similar analog on the ratio scale. If we were to take our empirical decomposition and just divide it by the probability of the outcome in the absence of the exposure, what we'd get out is sort of the corresponding decomposition on a ratio scale for relative risks, where we decompose the access relative risk, the extent to which the relative risk for the exposure exceeds one, essentially into our four components. The decomposition involves a scaling factor, but if we look at the proportion due to each of the four components, it drops out. That scaling factor drops out. So we can estimate each of the components, again, in a fairly straightforward way using, say, a logistic regression for the outcome. And once again, in the accompanying paper, we've provided SAS code to do this automatically and to get standard errors and confidence intervals. We can also do this with case control data. So let's return to that example in genetic epidemiology and see what we might learn from it. Once again, there are variants on chromosome 15 associated with both smoking and lung cancer. We're interested in the extent to which the variants affect lung cancer either through average number of cigarettes per day or independent, and also to the extent to which the variants interact with average number of cigarettes per day. And so we'll look at this question, how much of the effect, what proportion of the effect is due to just mediation or just interaction or both or neither. Data come from a case control study, Massachusetts General Hospital, consisting of 1,800 cases, 1,400 controls. Here are the characteristics of the cases and the controls. The study, importantly here, the cases do have slightly higher proportion of the variant alleles on chromosome 15. So if we apply this four-way decomposition using logistic regression, if we look at, say, the effect of having 0 versus 2 of the alleles, having two alleles increases the risk by a factor of 1.77. So the access relative risk is 0.77. That's the extent to which the relative risk exceeds the value 1, and that's what we're going to decompose, that 0.77. And if we do the decomposition, that 0.77 decomposes as follows. The largest components due to that reference interaction. Interaction, but not mediation. We can also estimate the proportion attributable to each of the four components. Again, 55% of the effects seem to be due to the reference interaction. We can add the two interactive components to get an overall proportion due to interaction, 59%. We can add the two components due to mediation, that due to mediation and interaction, versus just mediation, that gives us 6%. That 6% was exactly what we had obtained when we had applied the basic mediation methods. But now, what this decomposition allows us to do is to very clearly see that it's really interaction here that seems to be driving the majority of the effect, not mediation. And we can now quantify this. Before, we could test for interaction. We could say it was statistically significant. But does that really give us a sense as to how important the interaction is in driving the results? Is a measure of multiplicative interaction on the odds ratio scale of 1.3 important or not? What about on the additive scale? Is a relative excess risk due to interaction of 1.1 important, or is it not? Having a proportion measure, how much of the effect is due to interaction, is much easier to interpret and to see what's really driving the effects. How am I doing on time? Good. Okay. I'm going to skip over some of this. There are some caveats which will be coming back to the assumption that we've controlled for all mediator outcome confounders might not be plausible here. There's probably measurement error, and our self-reported measure of cigarettes per day. We've begun to do some sensitivity analyses for this, but when we've done that, it looks like, when we've tried to correct for measurement error, say it looks like that proportion due to interaction actually just goes up. Though the proportion mediated goes up a little bit more, the controlled direct effect goes down. But we can come back to this example if you're curious and we have more time, but I'd like to talk about how this is related to prior work in the literature. So again, our decomposition was a decomposition of a total effect into four components: that due to neither mediation nor interaction, that due to just interaction, that due to both mediation and interaction, that due to just mediation. If we combine the first two components, and we combine the second two components, what we get out is what's sometimes called a decomposition of a total effect into a natural direct and a natural indirect effect. And this is actually the decomposition that's been used in the causal inference literature for mediation for about 20 years now. It's also sort of provides the causal formulation of the methods being used in the social sciences. So if we take our first two components and add them together, and our second two components and add them together, all we get out is just the standard decomposition in the mediation analysis literature. But if we want to understand the role of interaction more explicitly, again, we don't have to content ourselves with this two-way decomposition, which is just a direct and indirect effect. We can sort of parse out the separate role of interaction as well. And we could look at how much of the direct effect, the first two components, is due to the interaction as well, and how much of the mediated effect, the third and fourth component, is due to interaction as well. Likewise, about a year before, realized that this four-way decomposition held in work done that I had done with colleague Eric Checken, we noticed that there was a decomposition of a total effect into three components, sort of a controlled direct effect, this pure indirect effect, and a component due to interaction. If the exposure doesn't affect the mediator, if we have a gene and environmental factors which are independent of one another, the total effect actually just decomposes into two components, which is where we began, the direct effect and the component due to interaction. But once again, we don't need to rely on this two-way decomposition or even the three-way decomposition. We can understand these phenomena of mediation and interaction more fully by using the four-way decomposition. And that same four-way decomposition that sheds light on mediation also sheds light on interaction. So in terms of relation to prior literature, it's sort of captured in this figure. We have our four components. If we combine the first two, we get the direct effect. In the causal inference literature, if we combine the third and fourth, we get the indirect effect. And if we combine those two, we get the total effect. Likewise, if we combine the second and third, the two components due to interaction, either without or also with mediation, we get a proportion due to interaction. But the four-way decomposition gives us sort of everything we want to know about both phenomena. So in the genetic epidemiology example, when we initially applied the mediation methods, what we got out was that the sum of the first two components, the sort of overall direct effect, was large, something like 95% of the effect. The mediated effect itself, third and fourth component, was small, something like 5% of the effect. And we tested for interaction, and we knew that there was interaction there. We knew that interaction played a role, but we really had no way of quantifying it. So in the discussion of that paper, which we published in 2012, a couple of years ago, we sort of had the story correct, but again, no way of quantifying how important the interaction was. And what this decomposition allows us to do is to quantify that role of the interaction as well when we're doing mediation. Okay, a couple of final concluding remarks. First, another quantity is sometimes considered of interest, which is we take the total effect, and then we subtract what we had been calling this controlled direct effect, the effect of the exposure that would remain if we were to remove the mediator. Sort of how much of the effect of the genetic variance would remain if we could eliminate smoking, if we could bring smoking down to zero. And so that measure is sometimes called a proportion eliminated measure. What proportion of the total effect could we eliminate if we could intervene on an intermediate, if we could eliminate that. And so that quantity is generally considered what's really of interest from a policy perspective. We're actually taking an intervention, we're doing something. It's not just studying pathways, we're saying, what's the effect of this intervention? How much of the effect would we eliminate? What this four-way decomposition also does is it gives a mechanistic interpretation as well to that quantity of policy interest. That proportion eliminated can also be understood as the proportion due to either mediation or interaction or both. Essentially, when we're intervening to remove the exposure, to fix it to zero, what we're doing is we're eliminating the proportion due to interaction or to mediation or to both. That's what we're doing when we're moving the mediator. Okay, so to conclude, this four-way decomposition makes clear what proportion of a total effect is due to just mediation or just interaction or to both or to neither. It unites within a single framework prior decompositions for mediation and also prior decompositions for interaction. It really gives the most insight, I think, into both phenomena. Next year, a book coming out on this topic, but I think this sort of four-way decomposition really brings these two ideas together. The paper, which is already out, we've provided fast code to do this, if you want to give it a try. And in some cases, I think it really has provided additional insight. I have another graduate student who's been applying these techniques in another example in genetic epidemiology, and we noticed that the decomposition, when we move from 0 to 1 allele, looks very different than the move from 1 to 2 allele. This is using the APOE gene and looking at different cognitive outcomes with different neurologic measures. When we move to 0 to 1, all of the effects seems to be direct, sort of not due to mediation or interaction. When we move from 1 to 2, half of it seems to be due to just interaction and half of it due to mediation and interaction. The interaction seems to play a prominent role. When we first saw these results, the sort of substantive collaborator in neurologic epidemiology was pretty skeptical, but then actually went back and looked at the literature, and sure enough, that explanation was consistent with what was going on. So I think this was an example where the analyses, the data analyses, actually provided substantive insight into what was taking place. But of course, there's no reason why these analyses are restricted to the genetics context. They really could be applied. These techniques could be applied more generally. The central challenge of this approach is really the assumptions being made, the assumptions about confounding, and I think perhaps even more importantly about the absence of measurement error. There are now sets of techniques, sensitivity analysis techniques for confounding, say, how strongly would an unmeasured factor have to affect both the mediator and the outcome to change results, and those techniques are now reasonably well established for direct and indirect effects, but need to be extended still to the sort of four-way decomposition. So we can see how robust are our conclusions to violations of these assumptions. We may not want to really proceed with drawing conclusions unless we think our results were pretty robust. Again, when we did this with the example I presented here in genetic epidemiology, it looked like many of the overall qualitative conclusions that interaction played a prominent role, that mediation was fairly minor, were fairly robust, but I've worked on other examples where just a little bit of unmeasured confounding seems to sort of explain away the effect. So I think it's really important to use these sort of sensitivity analysis type tools to try to get some handle on how important a violation of assumptions might be. So haven't had time to go into that, but that's really the central challenge, I think, in applying these techniques to data. So that concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you all for listening.
Integrate this into my thinking process, so to speak. I might have
So we try to answer that in two stages. It's a very good question. First, if we change the reference level to the mediator, our reference level we've been taking is zero. If we change the reference level of the mediator to some other level, and we could, in the smoking example, change it to five cigarettes per day, the control direct effect then, let's see if we go to the decomposition. The control direct effect is the effect of the variant on the outcome with cigarettes per day fixed to five. That's what it is. And then the component due to interaction essentially becomes the component due to interaction above and beyond the interaction that occurs with five cigarettes per day. And the other two pieces stay the same. So that's what happens if we change the reference level of the mediator. If we change the reference level of the exposure, we're sort of reversing all of the effects. So it is important to think about coding, but you can essentially apply this to two settings where there's not a natural reference level, but you have to think carefully then about sort of the interpretation of what it is that you're getting out. Yeah, so again, there's nothing with the approach that's restricted to these specific models. You can add additional C's, you can add nonlinear functions of the C's or interactions between the C's and the M's, or you could change one of the models to being log linear. You could use a spline. You can still carry out the decomposition with whatever model you're using, but the results are only going to be as good as the models are in terms of fitting the data well. So I think sort of a careful, reasoned approach would probably try. First stage would be to come up with models that fit the data well, and sort of then do the decomposition. So again, there's nothing that's restricted to these particular models that I've chosen. Every time you change the model, you do sort of have to go through a different analytic calculation, which is a little tedious, so we've only provided software to do this for some standard classes of models, but it's no different than when we have a binary outcome. Typically, we'll just fit a logistic regression, and we'll look at the odds ratio from that. This is sort of the analog of that in the mediation and interaction context. With our simple binary outcome, looking at odds ratios, we could use a much more sophisticated model. We could do a more careful job of modeling. We might get a better estimate of our odds ratio. And likewise here, we could do the same with the models. We could fit do our modeling more carefully, and we'd get.
So you have these strong assumptions of a narrow method confounded.
If you change the set of covariates, yes, but the confounding assumptions themselves are sort of relations between the distribution of counterfactual outcomes and the observed outcome. So I would separate sort of the confounding and control and the modeling tasks. Confounding control, I think, should be done principally on conceptual grounds, sort of what do we think are the common causes of these variables. Once we've decided on them, then the task becomes to model them well. I mean, there can be exceptions where you can have sort of no unmeasured confounding on on a sort of a different scale because the confounding cancels each other out. And so there's confounding in sort of our estimates for y1 and for y0, but not for the difference. So there can be exceptions, but I think those are pretty rare. So that would be my response. I would say confounding is really a conceptual question that needs to be done on substantive grounds. It's deciding what goes into C, and then the modeling is how does C relate to, how do the covariates then relate to the outcome. There may be other perspectives on this, but that's the way. Yeah, I mean, that's generally what we do in epidemiology. Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, in the actual paper, we sort of go through all this in more detail, but we did, we evaluate sort of the confounding assumptions, but we controlled for education, sex, age, and in this case, smoking duration, though we also tried analyses without smoking duration. We thought that might be an important mediator outcome confounder. Not too worried about exposure outcome confounding or exposure mediator confounding, but mediator outcome confounding may be a problem here. Something like neighborhood might affect both smoking levels and cigarette advertising, say, and independently air, lung cancer through air pollution or something of that sort. So again, that's why these sensitivity analyses, I think, are quite important.
Yeah, so this example, you broke it down in the four components, and you had a conclusion that you thought that the INT,
yeah, the reference interaction, that due to interaction but not mediation was...
Correct, so but now some of the common intervals, I see a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, so basically, it's like, what's really targeting your... You want to quantify, but you're also trying to do ranking of what the most important components are of the four. So is there a way you can actually think about targeting sort of the ranks here as being the important things?
Yeah, that might be interesting. I mean, I really haven't thought about that, but or sort of above a certain threshold, do we really care about these components if they're less than 10% of the effect? And we have evidence that at least some of them are pretty small. So we have replicated this in four other studies. The results were consistent. We do the meta-analyses, it gets the competence intervals get smaller, but the proportion competence intervals, unfortunately, are often quite wide. It's not great here, but often the estimates themselves have much narrower competence intervals, and that's because with the proportion measure, if there's some, if for the total, we're taking each of the components and dividing it by the total effect, if there's some chance that some of the effects are in opposite directions, if some of the components have confidence intervals which cover zero, it makes those proportion measures somewhat unstable. So I think although they can be helpful intuitive summaries, their statistical properties aren't great. Yeah, so that could arise again if some of the effects went in the opposite direction. If one of the effects, let's say, I mean, it wasn't the case here, but if the control direct effect were negative but the other components were positive, then one of the components, if we take that component and divide it by the total effect, could be larger than 100% because we have some components operating in the opposite direction. So one of the components could be larger than the total effect. And this isn't unique to this setting here. This arises with mediation questions more generally. You can have, and we have examples of this as well, direct and indirect effects operating in opposite directions. When that happens, probably it's not a good idea to use the proportion measures anymore at all. I mean, you can think of really extreme scenario where they are of equal magnitude in opposite directions, in which case the total effect zero and the proportions are infinite. So the proportion measures really only do, I think, make much sense to report if we think we've got some evidence that the effects are operating in the same direction, which we believe is the case here. But you know that this is the statistical uncertainty around it. Again, these do get narrower when we combine over the four studies. Whether we should be doing that, though, is questionable, because these are different populations we're working with, and the proportions could well be different, because some of these proportions are driven by what's the prevalence of smoking in the population to begin with. If no one ever smoked anywhere, the entirety of the effect would just be the control direct effect. None of the other components would come into play.
The way you calculate the confidence interval, yeah. So is that a normal approximation? So you have a proportion and you have the standard deviation, you just...
These are, yeah, delta method standard errors here. From, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could, but I feel that we don't really know, or not certain, that the effects are all operating in the same direction, and so I think it's important that the confidence intervals reflect that uncertainty. Yeah, I agree. If I were willing to make the additional assumption, all the effects are in the same direction, we could proceed in that way.
So, quantum mechanics, people discover things through mining the data, and then following up.
So the I mean one so I'll give two responses. One, I think one could sort of use these estimates to decide whether something was worth looking at a more detailed mechanistic level, not using epidemiologic data, but sort of can we now find, if it's all due to interaction, can we now find a plausible biological mechanism for this? In this case, the mechanism preceded the analysis. It was already known that carriers of the allele extracted more nicotines and toxins per cigarette smoked, and there was some work done on trying to figure out at more of a molecular level why that might be. But I think in the other example I gave with students currently working on, the analyses were what led sort of the neurologist to go back and sort of ask, well, is this plausible? What might be going on? So I think it can sort of prompt further reflection and investigation on some of the mechanisms. The only time we could really try to get at something of interest empirically, I think, is for that proportion eliminated measure, where we ask the question, what would happen if we were to intervene to eliminate the mediator? And these analyses give some sense as to what the answer to that might be, and that's something we could potentially do a trial for. All of these other pathways, it would be pretty difficult, but for that proportion eliminated, we could run a trial. So an example where this been working on with something like that might be of interest is that use of assisted reproductive technologies is associated with worse birth outcomes, but use of assisted reproductive technologies is also associated with twinning. And so we might be interested in, to what extent would we eliminate these adverse birth outcomes if we could prevent twinning by, say, single embryo transfer rather than implanting multiple embryos. And in that case, I think this is the question of policy interest, and that's something that could be verified subsequently with a randomized trial. But if you ask, is it worth running that trial? Is it worth doing? Is it worth looking at further? I think using these sorts of techniques and the observational data we have is about as good as we can get in terms of trying to determine whether it's worth investigating further. So although we're making assumptions, some of these quantities at least could be assessed in a trial. And what the decomposition does is it, again, gives a mechanistic interpretation of that proportion eliminated measure. It's a proportion due to mediation or interaction or both. That's what we're eliminating.
Yeah.
So multiple mediators can be done, in terms of figuring out how much of the effect sort of mediated through all versus through other pathways, and that's actually not much more difficult to do. I think this four-way decomposition would sort of really break down in that setting, though, because you have all of these different two-way interactions. So while questions of mediation, and I think are of interest, even in the multiple mediation context, I don't think this four-way decomposition is. And really, interaction is extremely difficult with more than two factors. Our power to detect interaction, even with two factors, is fairly low. You start throwing in three or four, and most of what you get out is false positives. I think in the case where we have just one exposure and one principal mediator of interest, I think this four-way decomposition might sometimes shed additional insight. I think other times just doing sort of a standard direct and indirect effects probably quite sufficient. But I really think probably the utility of this decomposition is restricted to a single mediator. One could proceed theoretically, but I just don't think it'll ever be practical.
Right, we think this